Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Blue Jays Center podcast presented by the Sick Podcast Network. Unfortunately, the Jays did not complete the road trip like we wanted to with the 500 record. They went 4-6, but we'll get into that after the intro.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to the Sick Podcast. Blue Jays Center.
Bautista drives it deep.
The sickest Toronto Blue Jays podcast. It's gonna be sick.
Cole Whiston, Rob Pentelemon, and James Price here on the Blue Jays Center podcast. Back at it again. Coming off of the Yankees series where we went 1-2, winning the first game. As Rob said on the last episode, that if we could steal one of the two Bowden Francis or Yusei Kikuchi games, then we felt good about the Gosman game. Turns out the Gosman game was the worst game of the three of them. And we will get into that right now. Let's talk first the bright spot on the entire weekend from the Yankees series. Yusei Kikuchi dominated. James.
Oh, boy, he was good. That's that curveball he had going. And he was throwing it for strikes, too, right? I think that he was competitive. And when he's hitting, when he's hitting that curveball and hitting his corners, it just kind of changes everything. It allows his 95, 96 fastball to play. And boy, he was good. Wasn't he, fellas? Keeping all those guys off balance, made Soto look quite stupid a couple times, made Judge look kind of silly. It was good. He looked really, really solid. And I was a little worried going into the start for multiple reasons. One, it's Kikuchi. You never really feel comfortable. Like, let's be honest here. How good he was last season, you just don't feel comfortable. And in an awful spring, take that for what it is. And his first start against the Rays wasn't all that great. So we're like, okay, we're still kind of waiting for it. And you saw it there in the opener where he was really good in the Bronx.
Anything, Rob?
Yeah, I think we can fire spring training numbers to the moon if we haven't already based on this weekend. If this weekend has anything to tell us. Yeah, no, I don't have a whole lot to add off of that. Unfortunately, because it was a Friday game, I couldn't catch most of it, James. So I'm glad that you did the whole rundown there on his performance. But yeah, looking based on what I saw, he looked terrific. I think he had 7 strikeouts in that game. And the stuff was moving as usual. He did have some high pitch counts, which, you know, a good Yankees lineup will make you work. But yeah, Yusei was awesome. And looking back at it, he's been awesome at Yankee Stadium the last couple of years. If you look at just his numbers, he's had some monster games in that ballpark. You mentioned top of the show, Cole, how the, like, I don't know if you said the one bright spot or the few bright spots, but yeah, I would say the one bright spot.
That's what I said. I said the weekend. One.
Yeah, that's all. The one. You're correct. There you go. Good, good. I thought you did. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah, the one bright spot all weekend. Yusei Kikuchi was awesome. The rest of the 25 guys, well, maybe that's a little harsh, but yeah, it was not a good weekend in the Bronx. I kept thinking after winning that game on Friday in their home opener, how nice it would be if the Blue Jays could find a way to steal one of these other games, go home 5-5, win your first series of the year, go 4-3 against the American League East. It feels like a bit of a missed opportunity that they lost the last couple of games.
Yeah, the worst part is that both of those games, game 2 and game 3, were winnable. And game 2 is probably the one that involves the biggest discussion from both sides of the plate. Offensively, we scored 8 runs to try to mount the fake comeback as we do. And on the other side of the mount, on the other side of the ball, Kevin Gausman sucked, and it was his worst outing as a Blue Jay so far. And obviously, it's his second start after the injury coming back. He obviously had an abbreviated start in his first outing up in the big leagues. So by all means, it wasn't like this was going to be a 100% Kevin Gausman game, but it was still. It was 0%. It was 0% from what we're used to. That was 0% Kevin Gausman. So let's start there, Rob.
Yeah, you might as well have had Mitch White start in the game based on that performance. You know, look, man, it's a rare sight because it's a guy who doesn't really put up stinkers. I mean, like we mentioned, the worst start as a Blue Jay, Kevin Gausman, a guy the last 3 seasons has been a top 10 Cy Young finisher. Because of that, I'm not going to overreact. I don't think it's a redeemable start where it's like this is going to carry over and all that. Maybe, like you mentioned, still not 100% healed from that injury, but although he did look pretty good the first 2 starts before that, obviously the start against the Rays and then the last spring training start against, or his first spring training start, the team's last spring training start against Pittsburgh. So to me, I'm okay to discount a lot of it. I'm ready to chalk it up as just a little blip in the data. I'm not really too concerned about Gausman. I think he's done everything to earn our trust. Unfortunately, it was just a bad game. Just a bad game. It happens. And unfortunate because I thought that was the game that the Jays were going to win. How nice it would have been to win the series right away and go for the sweep today. Yeah, but it wasn't meant to be. Didn't pitch well.
No, it definitely wasn't good enough. But I think the attributing factor, guys, is that was the fastball velo. I mean, we all saw the numbers. You know, he averaged in that Rays start around 95, 96 was the average velo with his fastball. And in that Yankee game, it was 91.4, like as an average, you know, and to start the game, it was in and around 89, 89, or 88, 89, 90. And like, let's be honest, fellas, that's Hyunjin Ryu stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, not good at all.
So with the two-pitch pitcher basically not having his fastball, it makes the hitting it makes the hitter it's so much easier to approach the plate at that point. And that's why he didn't have any strikeouts in his inning in a third, walked three, allowed a couple home runs. And he said after the game that he attributed it to a lot to the cold. Whether you believe that or not, I'm not sure. I mean, it kind of does make sense. A guy who hasn't been stretched out at all. Yeah.
His last two starts were in Florida.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. One in the dome.
One of them was in a dome. One of them was in a dome. Yeah.
He was outside in New York. So
yeah. I think it's definitely a factor. And as Rob said, not worried about him. Like the dude has done everything for this team. He's bounced back. And I think it was a Keegan Mathis, I think, who tweeted it out after the game or even during the game that it's a very similar thing happened to Gausman early last season. So not to worry about it too much, but if it happens again, because I think his next start will be in Toronto, probably with the dome closed, or it'll be warmer than it was, then we might have a little bit more of a discussion. But after one start in a cold Yankee stadium, not going to dwell on too much. But yeah, not a great start regardless.
You know what he did do, though?
I think, just to jump in there, I think the fact that we are, like I mentioned before, knowing it's Kevin Gausman, we're all willing to discount that and kind of attribute a bit to these sort of circumstances. Obviously, the injury, the cold. I mean, like, let's be honest. Had that been Mitch White in that situation coming off an injury pitching in the cold, it wouldn't have mattered. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I think because I will admit that we do have some confirmation bias because it's a really good pitcher doing that. But yeah, like I mentioned, I don't think it's anything to be concerned about.
Yeah, but what he did do that we haven't seen so far, but that we did talk about in the last episode, was he took accountability for it. Straight up and down the field. You guys asked him whatever question you wanted to. He said, I wasn't good. It's simple as that. I was not good. And that's what I like about Kevin Gausman, and that's why we're not worried about that. But the rest of it, I want to know what you guys thought was the other bright spot despite a 9-8 loss and being down early and Mitch White going in looking like the white flag. The Jays did, you know, score 8 runs, and there has to be a bright spot in there somewhere, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mentioned on the last podcast that they won 4 games all season long when trailing by at least 3 runs. 2 of those games were in early April. So basically after the midpoint of April, which was 5.5 months, they only won 2 games all season long when trailing by 3 runs. And look, you can go through any team in baseball. No team has a good record when trailing by 3 runs. It's just science. You know, you're trailing by 3 runs, you're probably going to lose that game. It is what it is. What frustrated fans the most is that once this team went down, it was curtains. It was, that's it. That's game. That's all we got. That's all, folks. And that's what upset so many people is because, like, they didn't even give you an illusion. Like, the fake comebacks, we talked about the fake comebacks. They didn't even give us that last season when they fell behind. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this, I don't actually have the numbers to back it up, but it just felt that way. And I'm sure you guys can agree. If the offense just felt even more anemic than it already is when they were down multiple runs. And like you mentioned, a bright spot, they didn't win the game. Yes, it doesn't matter. You lost the game. It's an L, regardless if you lose 10-0 or 10-9 or 9-8 or how the actual score of the game. It's a loss, so that's the most important thing. But I do think, I will admit, it was nice to see them at least have a pulse after falling behind early. When your ace doesn't have his stuff and you down big early on, it's easy to pack it up. I'm glad that they at least showed some fight and made that somewhat watchable near the end.
Anybody what I find specific crazy. For you, James?
Yeah, well, what I find crazy is that it really wasn't the big guys who were giving a crap. Like, let's be honest, guys. As much as Vogel Pack, watching him run bases is kind of painful. Watching him hit an RBI double at his face, watching Ernie Clement get on, watch Davis Schneider hit a double in the 9th inning to get it close.
Pinch hit double.
Right. Yeah, because he didn't start.
Nope.
Anyways, that was a hot topic in the last one, and we talked about how he needed to start, and he started the first game and not game 2 or 3. Yep. But then you watch Springer's last at-bat of that game. I mean, you have the tying run on base, and you are the winning run, and he takes a hanger right down the middle and then flails it 2 sliders out of the zone to strike out and end the ball game. It's like, what's the approach there?
Yeah.
You know, and that was the big takeaway from me. Seeing all these other guys, all the depth players, they were the ones grinding this game back. And sure, Vladdy had the solo shot when it was 9-2.
And a short porch solo shot. So that thing doesn't go in any other field.
It doesn't bother me. I didn't like it at all. Regardless,
yeah.
Where was that the rest of the game? When you're down 9-2, it means squat to me. And watching these guys claw back and fight back, I loved that effort of it. But I want to see the big guys doing the part. And I quickly jump to today's game, guys. After the game, your top four hitters, I know, Rob, close your ears, bud, batting average stat. Every single one of them is hitting sub 200. Every single one of them. And it's just not good enough, guys. It really just isn't.
Yeah, the only outlier in that stat right there is that George Springer is doing a pretty decent job at getting on bag. Whereas, you know, the rest of them, there's not a whole lot going on for them. Rob, you had something?
Yeah, I mean, this is more not so towards like the Yankee series, but more a overall big picture offense, which I think we'll save for later because I'm sure it'll come up at some point. I think it's more pertinent to that. So, yeah, I'm good on Mike Quinn.
That's okay. I do want to touch on game three today because there's two points of emphasis. One is Bowden Francis, and two is this offense is getting dealt changeups and that nobody has made the adjustment to that. Just that simple fact alone to me is an embarrassment, is an embarrassing fact for a team. If the plan of attack for your entire offense is we will throw you our second best pitch, the changeup, that says everything it needs to, in my opinion. If you can't figure out how to hit a changeup 8 games, 9 games, 10 games into the season, then what do you have going for yourself? But Bowden Francis also, to the opposite end, fell in love with the fastball and it cost us the game. Like, and don't get me wrong, the offense needs to be better. But when this game reached our version of curtains in the Blue Jays, when we go down by 3, it was because he threw, I think, 5 of 6 pitches to Giancarlo Stanton, and they were fastballs. 5 of the 6 pitches were fastballs. And, of course, he hit it out for a grand slam after walking the 9-hitter.
You look at his first at-bat, Stanton, and they were trying to pound him in, and then go away. And it worked. But that entire second at-bat, I think Bowden Francis was so shit-scared to walk in another run that he just wanted to throw strikes. And I was listening on the radio at this point, and when Rizzo was at the plate, Yankee Stadium was buzzing, and then he fell behind in the count, and I'm like, I think he's caving here. Like, you guys remember, I don't know if you guys remember last year when the Blue Jays were in Anaheim, I guess, against the Angels, and we had to see Trevor Richards face Mike Trout, and I'm like, dude doesn't want to see him. He's spiking everything. He doesn't want to see him at all. And that's kind of what that whole situation felt like. Bases loaded, Yankee Stadium, tie a game. He can't find the zone. He's got Stanton at the dish. And it all just unraveled on him. And that's kind of makes sense, guys, because he never saw any of this levers last year. So it definitely opened your eyes a little bit.
It's two starts in a row where you didn't have a chance to win because of your fifth starter. And look, they ended up getting somewhat back in the game. It was competitive. But yeah, two bad starts by your fifth starter. We mentioned on the last podcast, we all came to a consensus is that the rope just cannot be overly long with Bowden Francis. And I think we all, I'm not sure if anyone has difference of opinions. We seem to all kind of come to a consensus in the chat that, yes, the first two starts were difficult. We're willing to see it through one more start against a really awful Rockies team at home next weekend. But after that, if that doesn't go well, I think you have to have a serious conversation. Look yourself in the mirror, and you have to, I don't even mean to have a conversation. I mean, pivot. I mean, like, you need, sorry, Ariel Rodriguez. I know we wanted you to have like a nice slow dive into the big leagues with a lot of reps in Buffalo. You got to come in here. You got to pitch for this team because we need to win. Okay. And if Ross Atkins, if we don't win this year, I don't know where I'm working next year, you know? Yeah. So if you're Ross Atkins, you have to be able to make that call. And look, at this point, Bowden Francis, he's out of rope. At this point, one more bad start. And I think at this point, you have to, you got to make a shift. And in terms of the actual game plan stuff, I agree with you, Pricey, there. Your analysis there was spot on. I thought first time through the order, he put up 2 zeros for the first two innings. Mm-hmm. But the whole time, you just watched how he pitched. And credit to him, put up the zeros. A lot of hangers. I think that's why he might have fallen in love with the fastball, because the off-speed stuff just wasn't hitting his spots. He did throw a nice one to Soto. He struck him out in the first inning, which I thought was really impressive. But that was one of the few that he threw that was good all game long. I thought that he got away with a lot of unfamiliarity because the Yankees had never seen him before. But I was always worried. Let's see how he does the second time through the order. And sure enough, it didn't go well. It didn't go well.
That is something that, you know, I think we mentioned it probably in the last pod when we were talking about it, was Kevin Barker mentioned it in spring training, how his stuff is good to start games, but as it gets deeper, the stuff starts to diminish a bit. Now, we saw that today, how stuff was decent to start, was able to get through two, but then the third, when the stuff started to fall off and he started to get into trouble, it derailed. So it's something to keep an eye on, guys. It really is.
Yeah, and that moves us to the rest of our show. And we first go to the banter bag, then we're going to have Stat Genius as always. Then we're going to have On the Farm, lots to talk about now that all of it's rolling so far. And then, of course, we're going to preview the Mariners series as the Jays finally come home for the 2024 campaign. First, the banter bag. We have four questions. First one is, of course, number 27 is in a slump. And the question is, you know, when do we suspect him to get out of this slump? I looked into it, actually. His numbers coming up against these pitchers actually look pretty good. He's 0 for 5 against Luis Castillo, but only one strikeout. He is 1 for 3 against George Kirby, no strikeouts. And he is, I think, he actually is good against Logan Gilbert, and so is the Blue Jays, and I'll get into that later. And he has a homer off of Gilbert as well. I think he's 4 for 13 or something like that. So I do suspect that Vladdy's coming home. He's going up against a Seattle team that obviously comes with a chip on our shoulder, and the fact that I think he has, at least on paper, some good ABs against these guys. I like to say that he might get out of the slump this weekend. What do you guys think?
I'll start. I'm always hopeful, but you can fire it up.
Well, my one thing for Vladdy is show that you care.
Yeah.
And I know that's a broad statement, but seeing the last 3 days at Yankee Stadium and knowing his feelings towards the Yankees and their feelings towards him, seeing game one where – was it game one? I think it was game one where he struck out and was smiling. And – I'm sorry.
Four awful ABs, by the way. Four awful ABs in that game.
Oh, yeah. They were horrific at bats. Yeah. And he strikes out and gives you a little, okay, you know, and starts, you know, smiling. And I'm like, what is there to smile about right now? The offense has been awful. You're the catalyst and you've been awful. What is there to smirk about? And the thing that really got under my skin today, guys, was his last at bat. Watching, I don't know if you guys watched the end of the game, really, but his last AB today was a ground ball up the middle. I think it was played by Volpe on to first. And, you know, as you guys know, camera pans over when he fires it onto one. You see Rizzo catch it at first base. In comes Vladdy into your screen, helmet off and just in his hand as he's running up the line. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, that's stuff that you would be benched and kicked to the curb in the minor leagues or in, you know, any other form of baseball, let's be honest. If your name wasn't Vladimir Guerrero Jr., you'd be at it talking to. And it is awful that he's not backing it up. If you're backing it up and then you do stuff, fine. I guess we'll bite my tongue with it. But you're playing this bad and you're acting like that. It's a painful look. It's a really bad look, especially how bad this team was today with runners in scoring position again.
Yeah.
I'm losing hope, man. I'm losing hope, and I'm losing hope fast, sadly. It's just watch. Obviously, we mentioned the Friday game, the four awful ABs. I'll cue just the first two at-bats of the last two games. George Springer leadoff double. All you can muster is a bad at-bat, a weak ground ball. And he moved him to third both times. They didn't cash him in, of course. But and then here today, bases loaded, two-run game. Here you go. You finally have a chance. You were just given a gift. Oswaldo Cabrera just booted a ball at third base. Except that would have been an inning-ending double play. It very well could have. It was hit kind of slow. Maybe Springer beats it. I don't know. It could have been an inning-ending double play. And now you have second life. How often do we see in professional sports when you're that guy, and it doesn't matter baseball, you give a guy second breath, he kills you. That's what killers do. And to me, it's like I hate to do this because I'm such like a numbers guy. It's all factual. And like these words like killer instinct and will to win, like they just don't resonate with me particularly well. Like I'm starting to question Vlad's killer instinct and will to win. Like it's just the at-bats in these situations. Like I'll be honest with you right now. You ask 100 Blue Jays fans, who do you feel more confident in? Game on the line, runner on second, you need a hit to tie the game. David Schneider or Vlad? I don't know. The fact that we're there yet. I mean, I don't know. I'm being honest with you. I'm being dead honest with you right now.
We're posing the question to the audience right now. Leave some comments down below.
Go ahead.
You know where the answer would be, fellas.
Yeah, exactly.
And look, I'm such I'm just such a massive Vlad fan, and like all the advanced. I didn't even take a look at the advanced numbers today because I did last week, and it ended up turning into this. So I believe in superstitions. I'm not looking at them right now. It's getting really tough, and to me, knowing how anemic this lineup is, and how we'll talk about the lineup later because I do have some thoughts on that. But
yeah, for sure,
in my opinion, this I said, can this lineup just be good enough? I know for a fact it's not going to be good enough if Vlad's going to be this, and obviously he's going to be better than this. But by better than this, is it going to be the 110 to 115 OPS plus guy we saw last year, or is it going to be a legitimate 140 to 150 OPS plus guy like we all would have expected coming into the season after hearing how great spring training was all over again? It's just, to me, just a really disappointing, unimpressive road trip for Vlad.
Yeah, and another guy in the lineup that people are, you know, starting to get, you know, frustrated with, and it's not necessarily because of him because he hasn't really gotten a shot in the lineup, is Daniel Vogelbach. It's more so that what the people that have gotten a shot are Ernie Clement and David Schneider, and both have shown to be competent hitters in this lineup, and both of them don't really seem to be getting a full leash. And the comment was basically, you know, why are we letting Daniel Vogelbach take up a spot when we can just let the kids play? I don't think I'm going to pose it to you guys because, yes, we agree. We agree that the guys with the upside that we have unknown potential in, yes, they should be in the lineup. We said it last pod. David Schneider sits at the top of that list, and Ernie Clement is, you know, close second, 1B to that as well. Another question that I do want to get into that from Banter Bag is, I know it's way too early. He also acknowledged that it was way too early, but if we're going to go after something today at the deadline, I assume we can all agree it's a right-handed power bat. Or sorry, cool. a left-handed power bat is what I meant.
I could think of an amphidextrous power bat, left-handed only, right? I don't care. I need someone who can offer some punch in this lineup. Your fourth hitter today doesn't have an extra base hit this season. Your fifth hitter today took a 3-2 fastball down the plate because he knows he can't touch any high heat. And yeah, obviously Luis Gil in that inning, he couldn't throw a strike to save his life, and he pissed Angel Hernandez off, which is a little funny in my opinion. But still, the fact that you weren't even willing to swing, Kevin Biggio was up there hoping to get bailed out. And that just tells you, this guy should not be hitting in the middle of a big league order. And not to mention, Ernie Clement, God bless him. Ernie's been awesome. That home run, which we haven't touched on, should have been mentioned. That home run that hit on Friday was huge. He shouldn't be hitting sixth, man. Like, this middle of the order, it just has no oomph.
No, has no you pop. Said it. You said it in the chat, and I want you to say it right now.
I'll say it. I don't think there's a team that has postseason aspirations that's running out of a middle of the order this bad. And look, I get it. Justin Turner, day off. He's usually the cleanup hitter that elevates the lineup a bit, but still, like that it's a bad look, man. And here's the thing: this is a fully healthy lineup. There's no, to me, it's like I keep watching this lineup day in and day out, and in the back of my mind, I'm just thinking, Danny Jansen is the guy. He would be the guy. I agree, but it's like there's no big guy coming off the IL that's going to save this team. You know, Danny Jansen's going to be a nice player. He's not going to. You can't stick him in there and be like savior at the cleanup hitter. I mean, he might have to by default. But it's not. He doesn't factor in as that type of guy. He doesn't profile as that type of guy. So, yeah, no. I don't care what. They need a guy who's playable, because I don't want to hear all these excuses about, oh, he can't hit lefties, he can't hit righties, got to keep him on the bench part time. You need a legitimate everyday middle of the order power bat. You have to,
That's something we all preached last year, guys, and we saw all the Teoscar rumors at the deadline. Everyone's getting all horned up for bringing Teo back, and obviously that didn't end up happening. We didn't get the power bat, and we saw what it did to this team, the Jays moving forward.
Yeah,
I want to touch on your Vogelbach point there, Cole, briefly. The funny part is about that everyone's yelling about Spencer Horwitz, and I'll get more into him in the on the farm part. But the only reason Vogelbach's here is, one, Horwitz didn't have a great spring. I know, Rob, it is what it is. He didn't have a great spring, and Vogelbach hit a bomb off of Gerrit Cole and enjoyed the hell out of it. Like, that's the reason he's on the team. And with that being said, he is guaranteed $2 million by the Blue Jays this season. So they're not just going to send him packing and just say, yeah, there's $2 million gone. They're not going to let that happen. So he's going to be around for, I don't know how long it takes, maybe when Joey Votto shows up, if that ever happens. And yeah, like I mentioned in the last pod, I don't think he'll play a game. We haven't heard squat about him since. But that's why I wanted to bring up about Vogelbach. That's why he's on this team.
One more
still.
Thing. Yeah. One more thing. And obviously, I don't want to spend too much time on Daniel Vogelbach, but I also just genuinely think that position, that 26th man, it's really got no use to the Blue Jays. They would love to take an extra pitcher, but unfortunately they can't. It's got to be 13 and 13. Daniel Vogelbach just doesn't really make sense in this lineup, a lineup that you need DH days for Justin Turner. You need DH days for Springer. You want to give a DH day to Vlad every now and then. You already have David Schneider that's squeezed out because of his inability to hit against right-handed pitching.
So they say, yes, exactly, correct.
So it's like, to me, Daniel Vogelbach, he's just there to be a pinch hitter, in my opinion. I don't think he has any actual role in this team. He's a good hitter. He's a guy for the last half decade has been an above-average big league hitter, which is something that this team just doesn't have a lot of. But unfortunately, because of the roster construction, you just there are no position to give that 26 guy every day at bats, especially a guy like him who's just such a constrained player who doesn't offer a whole lot outside of his bat. And to me, you're right. He had a better spring than Spencer Horowitz, but I also think that they kind of want to give Horowitz reps. Whereas, yeah, like at the big league level, you're okay with like a Vogelbach, a veteran who you're not trying to, you don't really care about his future ascension. So you're willing to just park him on the bench and have him in complementary roles.
Final banter bag, and I assume this is going to be a constant in this segment through every show. At some point, depending on the question, doesn't matter what it is, this name will be get brought up, I assume, every single show. How long is the leash for John Schneider? Rob, this is the worst part, or the worst narrative that you like to talk about. So I'm going to start with you.
It's an easy answer. It's once Ross Atkins feels threatened. That's what happened last time the manager got fired, right? You lose a bunch of games. They start coming for your head, and you pull the shoot. You pull the last second card, and that's what's going to happen this year too. If Ross Atkins feels in the position like he needs a scapegoat, John Schneider's going to be that guy. That's what managers do. That's what they are. They're hired to be fired. They're hired to be a human bullet shield, and in the meantime, just put on lipstick on a pig when things aren't going well for the baseball team, which we all know they don't have a lot of control over. It's that simple. Once this team feels once Ross Atkins feels pressure and has to do something, that's the lever he'll pull.
Does he finish the season?
No. My thought, and it's funny because, you know, initially when the whole Montoyo step up, I truly believe that Schneider would be the guy getting the job just because, you know, you think about it logically, right? He grows up with these kids. He goes through the system, wins championships in the minors with them. You think it would work in the pit?
Logically, I would argue against that. Why would you logically think for a World Series contender, somebody that you're trying to go over the hump, bringing up a fucking double-A manager was going to do it for you?
Yeah, well, it obviously wasn't the case initially, but it was the easy move right away. And then it was, of course. And that's why I think this is a little bit of a hot take I'm going to fire out there. I don't think John makes it to June. I don't think he gets to June. I think you give the first couple months, and with the offense being as putrid as they are, there's a reason that Guillermo Martinez still has a job.
Stop. You don't think he. Hold on.
I think John gets fired before Guillermo. Crazy as it sounds.
Gotcha.
No. He's not taking over. No. I think John.
You know who's taking over? Mr. Offensive Coordinator over here.
Yeah.
Yep. That's where I was going. That's why he's here. Because he's an offensive. I think John gets I don't want it to happen just for the fact of like he does seem like a good dude, but the fact this team's not responding to it. And it's the easiest move to make in sports to fire the coach, get a new voice. Mattingly's been in the organization for a couple of years now, so it's not really a new voice.
That's what I mean. Nothing's changing. Nothing's changing baseball.
Of course not.
Yeah.
But I think he doesn't make it to June. I think Mattingly takes over for the rest of the season. We just kind of see how it goes from there.
That does seem like the very likely scenario.
Yeah. Whether you agree with it or not, I think that's the way it is.
I could see a path. I'm being honest.
That's okay. That's it for the banter bag questions. We will now get into something that's a bit more fun, but also tends to lead to negative. It's the Stat Genius section.
Love that tune, fellas. I love it.
It's good stuff. The song gets me going, and then I realize, like, oh, wait, my stat today is actually about our star player who all of his underlying numbers are not that good. So that's my segue. It's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and if you look at his sweet spot percentage, if you look at his ground ball percentage, you look at his line drive percentage, they are all in regression. So obviously that means sweet spot is down, line drive is down, and ground ball is up. All from last year. In fact, I believe the sweet spot percentage is at his career worst.
Have a launch right angle by any chance? You know the launch angle by any chance?
So the launch angle is actually not too bad. So I left that out. Obviously, for
double digits, it's still double digits.
It is. It is still double digits.
Okay. At least we have that working for us.
It certainly feels like from these games. I don't know how it's double digits because from these games, right, it feels like every. It seems like three to four ground balls every time. And that I was shocked when I saw his fly ball percentage is actually up from last year, and his launch angle is still good. It, like I was shocked, but the rest of it isn't good. And I'm like, okay, well that makes more sense now. So that is my advanced analytics for today. If anybody else has anybody else, no?
I have one. I have one. Now, with negative numbers, you can choose to dissect them two different ways, gentlemen. You can choose to look at them as what they are, and that's negative. It's not good. We could also do is choose to say, well, it can't get worse, which means it's only got to get better. And we have today's talk. It's the Blue Jays pitching staff, which we all agreed is the backbone that's going to carry this team. That's why you're excited. Pitching and defense. They were top five last year. They were so good. That's why you had any hope. That's why you still had hair by the end of the season, because the offense was just so unwatchable. They haven't been very good this season. I'm going to go through the numbers right now. 25th in team ERA. 26th in team whip. Over 1.5 a game. That's yikes.
Yeah.
28th in Ks per nine. 30th in home runs. 18th overall. Fielding percentage, which isn't my favorite defensive stat. There's so many better stats, but it's just one that I could dig up there. 20th. Batting average against 28th. So by all these metrics, all the raw numbers on the surface, suggest that Toronto Blue Jays pitching staff in 2024 is bad. It's below average, which is anything but what we expect coming into this season. Now, obviously, they are skewed. You had an awful outlier Kevin Gausman game yesterday. You've had two bad fit starter games. Chris Bassett hasn't looked like himself. But overall, small sample or not, it hasn't been what we expected. And the offense certainly hasn't been what we expected. So the Toronto Blue Jays, based on all these numbers I'm giving you, are fortunate to be 4-6, which is not good. But at the same time, you could also look at it as, tough road trip, played three good teams, didn't win a series. But hey, 4-6 despite playing awful baseball. These underlying numbers suggest they've been playing awful baseball. No way around it.
Yeah.
Awful baseball. Sure. Maybe 4-6 isn't that bad, considering how bad you've played. It's only going to go up. It's only got to go up.
We all agree that, like, all of those numbers will not be what this team finishes as.
Yes.
So, yes, the only trajectory is up. Now for the actual positive section of this podcast so far in 2024. It is looking ahead to the future of the unknown, of what you don't already know. It's things you haven't seen before. It's the On the Farm section. And James Price leads the way.
Well, okay. See, Cole, you teed it up for all the positive stuff. Now, we got a hint of both. So I'm going to ask you guys, do we start with the negatives?
No, start with the good news. Start with the good news.
You want good news first. Okay. Yes. I mean, the bad news is quite rough. But let's start down in Dunedin with the Blue Jays. Now, obviously, it's quite low in the farm system, so it really doesn't mean too much to a lot of people. However,
well, I will say to people that aren't in the hardcore baseball world, AA is actually where most of the top prospects and organizations are put into until they are literally on the doorstep of the major leagues. And even sometimes they will just skip AAA entirely because of the AA numbers. So it's actually a good league.
Correct. Yes. Dunedin is the A-ball team.
Oh, fuck me.
It goes Dunedin, Vancouver, New Hampshire, Buffalo, Blue Jays. So quite a ways down. That's where Alek Manoah is, but we'll get into him in a second here. The Blue Jays first round pick. Last season, Arjun Namala, we saw him right at the tail end of spring training, and he hit a bomb, and we're all like, ooh. And what did we talk about, guys? I think it might have been the first pod we talked about how their draft history has been a lot of, well, we want guys well-rounded. We want guys to be bat-to-ball skills, stuff like that. You don't get the high upside play. Well, Arjun Namala talked about it in that, either whichever pod it was. We talked about him being the first guy they finally take with upside, with that potential power. He's a big kid. What does he do? He hits his first home run in Dunedin today. It was 100 miles an hour off the bat, 376 feet. It was a moonshot. It was on an off-speed pitch as well. Off a guy, I think, who does play in the big league. So he's kind of like
Sawyer Gibson. He actually played in the majors last year. Yeah.
Guy who has done it, and Arjun's only 18 years old. Definitely a big positive in that one. Manuel Beltre.
Adrian Beltre.
BJC legend, Manuel Beltre. who's you know, first couple seasons in the minor leagues offensively hasn't been there, but boy, he had a big day today. A walk-off two-run shot for Dunedin to come back after Manoah's start. so big job from him. That's great stuff there. Now we go. Oh no, Landon. Okay, Merodis. I'll figure it out at some point, guys. But he was the Jays, I think, like third round pick last season. Their number 11th ranked prospect. He's only 19 years old, and he went four innings of hitless ball and struck out five. Didn't walk anybody. Was really good down there in his. I think it was his first outing of the season, so he was awesome. Now we go to Buffalo, and boy, it was a great day for Buffalo. It really was. Aurelvis Martinez, 3-for-5, scored three runs. He was great. Addison Barger hit his first home run in AAA this year. It was a 450-foot moonshot, three-run shot. So he went 2-for-3 with three RBIs, scored a couple runs, and walked twice. He was great today. And also Spencer Horwitz. We talked about him briefly earlier. In the very minimal starts of the season, he's hitting 360 with an OPS of over 1,000. I think it was they had a doubleheader yesterday, and he had six at-bats. Got on base every time. So that's something to keep an eye on. And Yariel Rodriguez got the start, 2 1/3, one hit, two walks, four Ks, no runs allowed. So bottom line, he has allowed one hit over, I think it's 6 1/3 innings so far in his Buffalo time.
Which does go, one, to our previous point of that Bowden Francis' leash is short, especially considering our Rodriguez's success so far in the minors. And then it will go to your next point of our other potential fifth starter.
Yeah, so that's enough of the positives, because the negatives just outweigh it, in my opinion. We obviously know Alek Manoah was kind of building up, was pitching the side sessions, all that stuff. He got into his first actual game for Dunedin today. Wasn't good. Inning and 2/3, five hits, seven runs, six of them were earned. Walked three in a row at one point, two Ks, and allowed a home run. And then he says after the game, he liked his blah, 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 all that stuff. So didn't do the Kevin Gausman.
He liked
didn't
do the Kevin Gausman. Keegan Mathison tweeted,
there you go.
Yeah. Every single delivery looked out of control. And then Alek Manoah comes out and he goes, I felt fine.
Yeah, I think in that tweet, I think the video is of literally Manoah bouncing one before home plate. So it's awful. Like, there's no other way of looking at it. It's awful. I don't know if you guys want to keep going on that. Or you want me to keep rolling here?
I think we can all agree that Manoah's been building back up. Obviously, it was his first game action. Yeah. We all know what happened last year. But regardless of all of those things, it's week two of the MLB season. It's his first start against actual competition so far this spring since his injury. And he's going to get a look no matter what. He has to be that bad. He would have to be that bad continually in the minors for him not to get another look in the majors again this year. So I think we can all chalk it up too. Yeah, sucks. Sucks to see.
Okay, so there's two more negatives. And go ahead, bud. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it sucks to see, but at the same time, a couple more good Yariel Rodriguez starts. Ricky Tiedemann starts looking good. I mean, heck. That last year, Alek Manoah had a lot of grace, period, because there really wasn't anyone breathing down his neck. This year, I think it's a different story. I think that while their preference would be that fifth starter role be filled by him at one point, being that he was, at this moment, the only guy who's ever had any experience pitching at the big league level and pitching as nevertheless, a competent starter, but like a high-end starter, I think he's running out of rope. It's been 18 months since the last time we saw Alek Manoah actually be a high-end big league starting pitcher. And right now, I think he might still be ahead of the track meet, but the other runners are coming up on him. They're closing in on him. And I think this is concerning. I'm not sure how many more of these starts Alek Manoah can afford to have before he skyrockets down the depth chart even more than he already has.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on. I'm very curious where his next start's going to be. If they're like, okay, put him at Double-A, or do they give him another start down in Dunedin to really – it would say a little something. Rob, you mentioned Ricky Tiedemann. We talked about it last week, how his first outing wasn't great, but the conditions in Buffalo were horrendous. Mm-hmm. So you kind of chucked that one up as a whatever.
Good. It was a good start.
Yeah. Two and two-thirds, three Ks, one run allowed. It was what it is, right? But his last outing, which was the fifth, which was 2 days ago, wasn't great. Inning and 2/3, one hit, couple runs, didn't get any strikeouts, and walked four. So it didn't look really good whatsoever in his second Buffalo outing. Again, I don't know if you guys want to dwell on that at all. But
wrapping up a week two. Yeah. Like that's what I
Yeah, I'm not going to dwell on, obviously, like you said,
number one prospect. He's a top 10 prospect in baseball.
Yeah. It is what it is. Would have liked to see a couple strikeouts out of him, but yeah, it is what it is. Four walks and no Ks is kind of a tough look, but you move on.
Like these, do you know where the game was? Was it in Buffalo?
They played Worcester.
But even then, that's still a cold weather climate. You know, the playing in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Oh no,
so
for sure.
It's still a Northeast game. So to me, like all these like AAA Northeast games, I'm willing to discount them a little bit more than the Manoah start, for example. I do think that obviously we all mentioned weather impacts pitchers a ton, and yeah, I'm not really going to put that much stock in that as much as I would for the Manoah, for example.
Yeah,
definitely not. And the last one, and in my opinion, the crappiest of all news. I know we're talking about those two guys, and this is the crappiest. Blue Jays top prospect, left-handed pitcher Brandon Barriera. It looks like he's injured again.
Probably TJ.
It doesn't look great. He kind of just, you know, what's it saying here? He pitched in low A for the Jays, was lifted from a game the second inning after throwing a slider. He showed discomfort after the pitch, and then he slammed the ball, spiked the ball into the ground. And if I don't know if you guys remember, Rob, you probably remember this, Ramon Ortiz, when he threw that pitch and then he kind of crouched
in San Diego. I'll never forget it, yeah.
He crouched down and he was like, this is it for me. I'm not saying this is it for Brandon Barriera, but he
Ramon Ortiz was like 40. Yeah.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not over for him. But I'm just saying the reaction was the same in the sense that Barriera slammed the ball to the ground and then got in that crouch and left the game and didn't return. So he has dealt with injury issues in the past. It doesn't look good. And of course, the three names we have mentioned are three of the bigger name.
Yeah.
Guys we have in this
order. Put him third. I would put a bad Ricky start above it. I would put a horrific Alec Manoah start above that. And I would hold, yes, Barriera might be done for the season. He might have another Tommy John. Who knows what happens after that? I understand. But he is third in that depth chart behind them. And then even behind Yair Rodriguez. So I agree. It sucks for a top prospect in any organization to go down like that.
It's also probably a bait you have, right?
I would say I'll agree with that. That the worst part about this isn't about his future Blue Jays. It's about what we could have gotten out of him if, you know, he panned out this year. Yeah, I get what you're saying. That makes sense.
So that's it, fellas.
Which does suck to commodify a human being, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it does, yeah, exactly. So the preview for the Mariners series will have to be relatively quick as we are getting to the end of this show. But that's okay because the same kind of vibes exist, to be honest. I know we're 4-6. I know the offense is goddamn horrific. I know the pitching staff has shown, to be normal this year instead of, completely exceeding expectations.
I told you to give you the numbers.
With a couple outliers, but yes, I agree with you. Overall, bad. The vibes are actually good if you look into this series with the Mariners. You're coming at home. Obviously, Toronto shows out for the first series of the year. You got, you know, the new renovations, all the new gadgets and stuff. And then you're going to get up against the Seattle team who definitely you come into, and I hope there's some emotion going into your home opener that, yeah, there's a chip on your shoulder. Last time you were in this building against this team, they swept you in the wild card round. So, or maybe not the last time, but it happened, obviously. The most notable time with this team in your building. So, I guess you get game one. Cool.
Can I jump in real quick? Yeah, last time we saw these guys at our own barn, Anthony Bass.
Yeah, I know. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, exactly.
Raleigh went deep again.
Before that game, the Jays were 18-9. The offense was buzzing. They looked like a legitimate pennant team. They never looked the same after that. They had their share of wins. I never felt as good about that team after that Seattle series, for a record. So bad things happen when they come into our building.
Yeah, and you get game one, you get Luis Castillo, which we all know what he did against us in game one of the wild card series. So, but what I do like, besides the fact that we know what Luis Castillo comes with, the Jays historically, I think he's had he's only had two starts, but historically the raw numbers are actually not that bad. He doesn't give up many runs, but we usually get base runners on. Knock the ball around, the classic Blue Jays thing. We just get the big hit and get the runs in. But overall numbers have actually been pretty good. We have Jose Berrios going to the mound. Historically, he's been great against Seattle. So that's good for us. Our number one going up against their number one. And then we got Chris Bassitt versus George Kirby for game two. Same thing. Chris Bassitt at home, which obviously is the reverse split for himself. He's fantastic at home, or has been in his career, especially with the Toronto Blue Jays. So hopefully that works out in his favor. And George Kirby hasn't been good so far this year. And also hasn't really been that great against the Jays in general. Yusei Kikuchi goes game three. and Logan Gilbert goes game three for Seattle. Same thing. Logan Gilbert against this Blue Jays lineup, not good. Not good at all. We're really good against him. And over 900 OPS in five career starts, I think, against the Toronto Blue Jays in his career. And Yusei Kikuchi, in his limited sample against Seattle, obviously, because that's where he was coming over to the Jays. But in two starts I think he's had so far, he was good in both of them. Actually, really good in both of them. So hopefully, because we're coming home, and because we got three starters that we're actually somewhat used to, who we have decent numbers against, our pitchers are pretty good against these lineups, I have good vibes going into this. Especially when our star player has numbers that line up pretty well against these three guys. What's your thoughts?
I have two thoughts. Two thoughts and then a weird stat that I'm not sure how you guys will find, but I'll pitch it to you guys anyway. Yeah, I think Seattle's team very much in the same position as the Jays. Disappointing start to the season. Just like the Jays, a bad offense. They haven't scored. In fact, their offense is actually worse. They've scored less runs than the Blue Jays so far this season. So that tells you all you need to know relative. Basically kind of in the same position. They've really struggled. They're a team that obviously has aspirations to make the playoffs, just like the Blue Jays. So something's got to give. And look, you mentioned opening day. The vibes are always good. And unlike, I remember back in 2017, they started the season like 1-7 or 1-6 or something like that. They came on opening day and it was just, the air was just so out of the balloon. It hasn't been great, but it's not like that this year. I don't think 4-6 is terrible. It's still very much recoverable. Obviously, no time to panic just yet. So I'll be there going down to the park tomorrow. I know James will be too. It'll be a great time. It'll be fun. And now for my stat. I don't want to go back to the stat genius stat, but I will say this. Luis Castillo's last two games in Toronto, absent of that wildcard game, which I wasn't at, by the way. Last year, I was at the game. They beat him with Seattle pitch. 2022, he came here to Toronto with the Reds. I was at that game, too. They won that game as well. So the last two times I was in the building when Luis Castillo pitched, the Jays won.
You're guaranteeing a win, is what you're saying here.
I like that.
I'm just saying when Luis Castillo pitches, when I'm there, the Jays have 100 winning percentage. That's all I'm saying.
Love it.
This is data. These are facts.
Just stating the facts. Ripping facts. Rob's all about the facts today. All the stats about the awful pitching staff. And then he fires those out there.
I do have one question, though. Actually, James, give your point. I have one question to ask you guys coming from our guy, Mo. So our guy, Mo, for those of you who don't know, he's the guy who posts on Blue Jay Center. He's the guy who should be crediting with the awesome videos, the awesome posts, and sometimes maybe even give him a little bit of slack for the poor grammar. We're not going to harp on that, though.
It's tough.
He asked the question. He asked me today to ask on the podcast, and he asked, what can this team do to get the fans back in and excited on them? And obviously, first thing we all come up, hit some balls, score some runs, hit some bombs.
Yeah.
Outside of that, do you guys have any ideas on like what the Jays could do? Is there anything they could do outside of that, in your opinion?
I mean, I mentioned the whole Vladdy thing about showing a pulse and like you care a little bit more than, you know, carrying your helmet up the line. I don't know. Like it's pretty simple. Score runs, win games. Runs are fun. Offense is fun. That's why 2021 was so fun, right? We scored a ton of runs. It was great. That's why 15 and 16 were great. They scored runs. It was great. But last 2 years, boys, it's been painful.
I think to piggyback off that, showing a pulse is one thing, obviously. But just have fun. Like, this team used to have the likes of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Teoscar Hernandez, and Lourdes Gilliard Jr. And say what you want about, you know, those two guys who got traded away for the outfield defense. The vibes in the dugout, this team was fun to watch. It was fun to be around. And they got rid of the home run jacket. They went all in on pitching and defense and turned this entire roster culture into a not fun, button up, let's go and try to win some ball games and hopefully we can score a couple of runs.
Black tie and briefcase. That's not fun.
While we do it. And it hasn't worked out. And despite that, 89 wins last year, still one of the highest attendances in all of baseball. Like, Toronto shows out regardless. You win games, Toronto will be there.
Oh, yeah.
So they make the renovations, and Toronto showed out. Toronto loves the renovations. And now you're moving it into an all baseball encompassing lower level where all of the angles are focused on home plate, just the way it should be, just the way it is in every other ballpark that isn't for multi-purpose, you know, things. All you need to do is have fun and win ball games. And Toronto has no problem supporting you whatsoever. It's the only thing to do in Toronto in the summer. It's, or I shouldn't say the only, but it's the thing to do in Toronto in the summer. So that's what you need to do. I said on the last podcast, because of a banter bag question, that regarding the City Connect jerseys, if you're going to release them at any point, releasing it during this homestand is when you do it, I think. You release them, you debut them, you have it for an entire series, and then that just adds a little bit of spark into this organization right now that could really use it, because this roster construction is not likely to provide it on the actual field. They might come away with wins, but we need to have more fun in the dugout. That's what we need to have, I think.
Shout out Mo for a real question, by the way. Holy smokes. Yeah, for a real question from Mo is quite rare, so that's a good one.
This came after he asked me if we can have a full-on rebuild conversation. I told him, that's not a conversation.
There we go.
It's not an April 7th conversation.
Yeah. Now, boys, I'm just ready to get to a ballpark and have to crank my neck.
Yeah,
like almost in a 180 exactly. To watch the game.
So you guys are going opening like an owl. Day. You guys are going opening day. I'm going game two. Out of principle, I couldn't go to opening day this year just because I don't feel like this Jays ownership earned my ticket to opening day. And then my last thing that I did want to mention in the preview, an actual thing, three more righties, obviously, which just leads another.
So no David Schneider again.
Bench
that. Yay.
Right, he probably starts one of the two games, comes in and pinch hits, and that's that. So, or one of the three games, sorry. But hopefully,
you know what that means, Cole. You know what that means? You're going to see more IKF. Look at that. Yeah. Isn't that going to be fun?
Yeah, I'm sure his splits against righties are really good.
Oh, sure.
So that's concluding our show. Another packed one for you guys. Hopefully, the vibes turn around despite the 4-6 start to start the year. If we said it to you at the beginning of the year that's what we were going to get on the road trip, and yet. You know, the only difference is that we scored 50 runs while doing it. The vibes would be good right now. So look at it that way. There's only the only trajectory is up for this Blue Jays lineup and this Blue Jays pitching staff. And we're coming home. And hopefully that's what turns it all around. Thank you.
Win
for
a series. Yeah, win a series. Let's do it.
Thank you for watching the Blue Jays Center podcast. James Price, Robert Pintalamon, Cole Whiston here presented by the Sick Podcast Network.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast Blue Jays Center on YouTube, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts.